I don't know. Do you mind if I interview you about Slackware a little bit?
No.
Cool. Go ahead.
All right. Well, let's. Okay. Well, hey everyone. This is Clat. Hey. What are you doing here? When did you get here?
An hour ago.
Really? I didn't know you were coming here. Cool. This is Pat, by the way.
Hello.
Pat Volkerdien, rather.
Nice to meet you.
This is Mako. She's a Debian dev yet or not yet?
No, I'm an Ubuntu dev.
Yeah,
and
but
I'm going through the application process for Debian Maintainer.
Maintainer. That's anything with the word developer or maintainer after it. I think you people know, you know, magical things. Okay.
Do you like incense?
Yeah, I do.
Japanese, Indian?
Indian is what I've mostly smelt.
All right, this Japanese Saijudo Shirogiku. Familiar with the ingredient Kyara? Do you know what that is?
Mm.
Okay. There is a type of tree. I don't remember the genus species, but it's an evergreen type tree that grows in rainforests and in Indonesia, Thailand,
okay.
Cambodia. What happens is if the tree gets damaged somehow, it gets a fungal infection. And that works its way into the heartwood of the tree, where the tree fights back with extra resin production.
Okay.
And this battle goes on for centuries. It produces this core wood known as agarwood or aloes wood, and there is just nothing else that smells like when you burn this stuff. It is the most complex aroma.
That's crazy.
Very, very unique. It's the majority of what the smell in this is. Oh, wait, this may be the wrong stick.
Yeah?
Yeah, this is Kunmaido Ryeryoko aloes wood. It is an aloes wood, but it's a way lower grade than what I was trying to pull out of there. I'd gone to Kentucky and visited the Buffalo Trace Distillery.
Oh, okay.
And that was cool. It would have been closed, but I happened to show up just as Toyota was coming in with two buses that they'd chartered and had gotten an arrangement to have a tour of the place. And I just walked up to the crowd and followed them through.
Nice.
And, oh, wow. They've got this warehouse that was built in 1881. And it's got, I think it might be 2,300 barrels. Maybe it was more than that, but it's five stories of open brick exterior and then just timber inside racks holding all these things. And the smell of all of this whiskey evaporating through the barrels is just unbelievable. You get downwind of this building and it's like, wow.
Well, wait. So, but does it smell like whiskey?
Yeah.
Then? I mean, okay. So that's the
this
smell
is the stuff. This is the Saijudo.
It's hard to smell. Oh wow! That is that's got like a sort of a weird, deep kind of like undertone, but then it's got like this sort of sweet thing
Someone
on top.
Someone had said
or something.
That it smells hot without being spicy.
Yeah. So how do you know about the incenses? Have you actually gone over there and like researched these trees, or are you just reading stuff off the back of incense packages?
Reading material online mostly. But,
okay.
It's a hobby that's been brewing for a long time.
Well, it's kind of cool to know.
I started burning frankincense back in the 80s, the raw resin occasionally, and then went for a lot of years without any incense. And then I recently kind of got back into it because I smoked for too many years and then quit in 2000.
Okay.
And occasionally I still get the fidgety habit.
Right.
And lighting a stick and just rolling it around like that, and I got something burning in my hand, and it satisfies my stupid habit. I don't smoke cigarettes and don't stay away from that, but works for me.
Well, see, that's cool because I was never really sure if that incense, and I'm sure there is the fake incense maybe, but I kind of always wondered if it was like, I don't know, real stuff that I was burning, or if it was just like, you know, like produced like sort of like
because there is a lot of the stuff is all pure raw ingredients.
That's
and
great.
A lot of it is also perfume. There are a few companies that very deftly combine things like that. Daiatsu is one of them. They make something called Tokusin Tonka that is an incense containing French perfume. And normally I just do not like perfume at all. It gives me a headache.
Yeah.
And at first I hated the stuff, but then I started burning it outside, and there was something about smelling it from 10, 15 paces away on the wind that was important.
I mean, sometimes it gets stuffy in the apartment or the house or whatever if you try to do that.
Sometimes they don't fade well either. I made the mistake of burning that fenugreek stuff in the car, because I just cleaned the car out, and it's like, it still has kind of a smell, so I put a stick in there, sealed it all up, and let it burn out and then soak into the car. It was not a good result.
It probably seemed like a really good idea.
Good idea at the time, but it didn't smell like incense. It smelled just like bad stale smoke.
Smelled like just pure sage leaves, like dried sage? Yeah, that's really good.
That could be all right.
Yeah. I was shooting a movie in Oklahoma, and we met this guy, a Native American, who knew just about every leaf that you could burn for a certain sort of experience or whatever. What's it called?
Smudging.
That's what it's called?
Smudging is ritually burning sage.
Yes.
Usually, sometimes it's used to dispel evil or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what he was talking about. Yeah, okay. So,
I've used that before, usually along with a Tibetan chant, Hung Vajrape. I'll do things whether I believe they work or not.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is an interesting trick. That's a lot of magic has to do with just thinking it's going to work.
Yeah, true. So what about slackware?
Oh yeah, slackware.
What? How does that tie into this whole ritualistic burning of aromas?
Oh well, I do usually keep that going on my desk.
There you go. See.
So there is a tie, and it's and I guess part of how I ended up knowing about that, still how the incense is made and whatnot. If something is compiling, I sometimes will not multitask and will go read stuff online. Burn me out too much if I tried to utilize myself at 100% speed. So I'll look at other stuff, and incense is a big interest, and music. I should have brought my banjo here.
Oh, that would have been cool. You play banjo.
Play banjo.
That'd be cool. I play, I don't play, but I'm trying to learn, like, some guitar.
Yeah, I play guitar.
Because, yeah?
So.
I mean, it's
kind
really,
of a Garcia-ish noodling.
It's like sort of my, actually Garcia is kind of, I mean, I don't know that many rock guitarists. I'm not that much of an aficionado, but like when I hear him doing the guitar, I always kind of, I can tell it's him.
Sometimes one note is all it takes.
Yeah,
and there's
like
something
really
about the way he grabbed the string, and it's like, that's Jer.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is, he's probably been my biggest guitar influence, and that's what I play, is that noodly, lyrical,
that's cool,
totally improvised as much as possible. I mean, that's the struggle that you continually have to play any type of jazz music, is to purge yourself of the canned riffs. You get lazy and emit them, and everyone does. You would hear Garcia do it too.
Sure.
He had a few things that he would fall back on, and whether he tried to avoid that or not, I don't know, but it's,
I mean, some of his jams are just unbelievably just like, I wish they would never end,
what's weird for me about the Dead and none of the other jam bands that ever really fully captured it for me is this feeling that they're not thinking any farther ahead than the note that they're on, and the whole band gets into the same headspace, and that is just odd.
it really is.
Well, I don't know. I've been interested in things like Jack as a possible addition, depending on how much structure that would add. I'm not interested in the Pulse Audio, but the Jack would be good to have.
I have to say, it's really great doing multimedia on Slackware, and that's having come for me from Mac OS X as my main platform, and then trying to find a Linux distribution that could do multimedia solid, and finding that, sure enough, it was Slackware, the little distro that I started with at, like, version, I think, 12.1 is my claim to fame. So fairly new to it, but,
it was a while ago.
Yeah, actually, and that is something that I've been wondering about, I guess, because my impression is that Slackware releases fairly infrequently so that it can remain stable and tried and true, or is it more like because you don't multitask enough?
No, it is a case where the way that development occurs is that by its nature, you have to start slowly. I mean, we're working right now towards Slackware next,
yeah.
And I want to get kernels up and stuff like that, but you got to do the dangerous things early on and let them just kind of soak.
Okay.
And then as it... You just can kind of feel that the release is coming. It's a real intuition. I will not say at any point, oh, our next release will be this November 14th. We're going to put out Slackware 14.0.
Right.
I wouldn't do that because I don't know what the state of affairs will be, and there's really no way to predict. Something that Mad Dog said today that it stuck with me is it's just so much easier to swim downstream. And it's true.
Yeah,
you could just fight the way everything is coming along and try to change it, but I try just not to.
Yeah.
And it is a case of by the end of the dev cycle, it's a race to catch up and to keep caught up, and there is no way to do that early on. So. So that's what happens.
But this is your first Southeast Linux Fest.
Not been here.
Why are you here?
Robbie and the other guys, I guess, they're excited about this. It's kind of the home turf.
Yeah.
There's several slackers here who I have not met in person. I have not met VBATS.
Yeah.
David Samaro.
Oh, okay.
Dev Rob Zero, people I never had FaceTime with, and that is an important thing. You can't do it all behind a computer. Yeah,
yeah.
You gotta go and see people and do stuff.
Yeah,
I haven't been to a Linux conference in a long time.
Really?
I went to the KDE thing in 2008.
Do you know that I was actually there as well, but I was... I had just gotten into Linux, I think, and I was way too shy to talk to people. So you and a podcaster named Chess Griffin, who I used to listen to a lot, SBOPKG, and I think someone else was there. Oh, Dave Yates, the guy who actually sort of is the mastermind of this festival.
Talked to you at the bar, or at least hung out in proximity.
We very well may have, so it's kind of funny, but...
Because it seemed like I talked to almost everyone there. It wasn't a large crowd, so...
Yeah, you're probably right. But that's the funny thing about, I guess, Linux, and I'm sure a lot of people say this a lot of times, but... You know, you've got these people who basically affect your daily life because you're using software that they have developed or a collection of software that they sort of put together for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're normal people, you know, and they turn out not to be, like, intimidating or mean or, you know, or too famous to be bothered, you know. Just like,
I don't know how to... You know, handle a lot of that, which is part of why I'll stay. I don't want to be told that. Oh,
you've affected my life.
I don't mind. I don't mind it. I guess I am. I do like to hear someone say, you know, everything has been better and completely different because of this, and I never would have known about any of this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
so
pretty cool.
VBATS. You look happy.
Not again.
Primarily, I target you because I know you. It makes you cringe up.
Yeah, you see, I try to hide that, but
it's only for the shock
right.
factor.
So. Where did you come up with a GPL version 3 shirt? Do they have those here?
Free
Dev.
Free Dev was had them a few years ago.
Oh, cool shirt.
What is
back several years ago.
Isn't a CD block a 72nd of a second? I think it's something like that. One over a 72? It's some weird thing like that.
Is it really?
Yeah, because I've had to write stuff to do splicing of things.
Well,
I've done patches for old Grateful Dead shows where part of the soundboard got interrupted, and so you go looking for an audience tape.
Right.
And if the recording is already out and already in FLAC, you do not want to disturb any more tracks than you have to.
Yeah.
So you take the one damaged track and you've got to fix it so that it does not change the sector length. Otherwise, it's going to make a pop as it goes to the next track.
Yeah, sure. Wow, that's cool.
65
I did not know that. Do you have a, have you got any, I guess, patches or whatever? Like, have you posted any of that stuff to, like, archive.org or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Like, like 822.93 Eugene, the dead forgot to start their recording from the board at the beginning of the show, and they did Here Comes Sunshine, which starts out with this a cappella intro, and... knowing that there was, I didn't want to tape from the crowd that night because it gets burdensome sometimes. But I set up a DAT to tape their FM broadcast, and that turned out to be the best. It was recorded there in Eugene off the local station. It didn't have any kind of a relay that was terribly far, and it was very good quality. So good that when I put this patch on, I sent the one track back and was like, here, I got a fix for you. And they're like, where did you get this? Well, I patched it from my FM. We couldn't even hear the patch. The guy said it was the cleanest. It was. I probably threw away a bit more of the board tape than I could have. I chopped about 10 seconds of their board signal away to find a better place to hide the splice.
I mean, as long as the splice got hidden, I mean, that's okay.
But it's not missing anything. It ended up taking 10 more seconds from FM, but it worked out.
Yeah, that's cool. There's a Stella Blue recording. I think it was with Jerry Garcia Band. And it's like 16 minutes long. If you ever encounter that,
well,
that's the one to listen to.
I don't remember Jerry Band doing Stella, but it's possible.
It might not be. It might have just been the Dead.
I was there for the last performance of Stella Blue, and that version, June 28th of 95 in St. Louis, somewhere near St. Louis. He has the most emotional, almost breakdown at the end of the song, more so than usual. He really went with it. It was like, wow.
That's that's really cool.
Shivers down the spine just to think about that.
Yeah, and it's weird because I don't even...
A lot of very odd moments on that last tour, Tour from Hell.
Yeah.
And we all somehow, I think we knew this was coming.
Yeah.
I think that there was a realization. Another thing that is very odd is that as early as the mid-80s, there was some sort of understanding among the Deadheads that there was going to be, at the last show they would do Unbroken Chain, and that the last song they would ever play was Boxer Rain. And we knew that. I don't know how we knew that, but we were right. They had never played Unbroken Chain live. It came out in 1973, and they started playing it early in 95.
Wow.
It did get played at the last show. The last Jerry song for the encore was Black Muddy River, which is also, you know, almost... It is almost like, okay, I have to go off to die now. A very strange... And then Phil just takes him into Boxer Rain. They almost never did a double encore, and they did. And so it's like weird
stuff
that... I later tried to go see, and it was like... Did anyone write this down in advance, or was this just like some bit of folklore that we all knew and that we can't prove we knew this ahead of time? Well, we can't. But.
Do you remember if there was what else was going on at that time? Like, what was going on with the world? You know what I mean? Like, or was this just a Grateful Dead thing? Like, was it just the Grateful Dead coming to an end or whatever?
Well, for me, the period of time that strikes me as world novelty, and everybody seems to have some kind of agreement when I've talked about this, is spring of 96. I don't know what happened then, but odd stuff occurred in spring of 96. Do you know much about the... I'm sure by now you could not possibly have avoided this 12-21-12 thing.
Well, naturally, right, yeah.
we were following that in the 80s as well. And
oh, really?
A book that was out then called The Invisible Landscape that was written by Dennis McKenna and Terrence McKenna, and talks about how they discovered somehow, they'd gone down to Brazil, went to the rainforest, and with the natives did some sort of native psychedelic mushrooms for like a month. They just remained, and they said that they had conversations with an alien insectoid intelligence who told them about this 12-21-12 thing, and that it was actually because time does not run in the direction we think it does,
well,
and that that's
cool.
That's where the beginning point is, and that it's emanating backwards. And why that would be, I can't think of any good reason for that, but then... Then it's okay, so now I'm going to prove it to you, and here's how it works. And shows them all of this math and all of the hexagrams of the I Ching. Have you ever used that or heard much about that?
Well, I mean, Philip K. Dick wrote the whole Man in the High Tower based on the I Ching. He actually let that guide the story.
Oh, so like he would ask the I Ching where the story was to go. Well, that would probably work really well.
Yeah.
I don't bother the Oracle unless I have a real question, because it tends to give you your answer whether you like it or not, and I don't think I've ever had that fail on me.
Yeah, wow.
But, the something about the sequence of the normal King-Wen sequence of hexagrams then can be made into this wave. And when superimposed, and this 12-21-12 thing is weird too, because that was another spring of 96. This is going to get me in trouble talking about this crap, but spring of 96, no, I don't care.
Okay.
Spring of 96. I'm not quite sure what happened to me, but I went like temporarily nuts, and I came up with that same date having never really, you know, paid attention.
Yeah.
I think that The Invisible Landscape as a book came to my attention around then, really. It was a friend of mine who was reading it back from the 80s and whatnot, and brought it to my attention like in April or May of 96, after I'd already been toying with that and had thought that there was something weird too about 12-21-12, that there's only two numbers and it's almost like half-assed binary, and had begun to look at it.
That's
well,
a good
no,
point.
It's really 011001, which is what I think that's what Bender rattles off in the.
Is it?
01100101100.
Yeah.
The whole concept of that, the time wave zero, is that novelty is some sort of an essential force of the universe, the opposite of entropy.
Okay.
And it comes and goes like a tide. And as the wave approaches the zero line, things get stranger. And as it goes back up, things get more normal and follow old patterns. When they took this thing, they didn't know quite where to apply it, and they started looking for historical events to match it, to figure out where to put this thing. And found huge dips around like the end of World War II when the bombs got dropped.
Uh-huh.
And all of it ended up leading to this date, and then there's that whole Mayan connection to it.
Right, right.
And that was something I used when I should have saved that, but Slackware 13.0, if you look in the Slackware version, etc. Slackware version, it says it's version 13.0.0.0.0. That's the... that is the Mayan date for the rollover after 12-21-12.
I did not know that.
my GPG key also expires on 12-21-12. I've had I've had that key since 98 or something.
Yeah.
I had to figure out how to force PG or GPG to generate that so that it would expire on that day.
So do you think that time is linear? I mean, you personally.
I'm not sure if I believe in time in fashion that, in a lot of ways, it's an illusion caused by, you know, our motions, and whether there even is such a thing other than the present moment, I'm not sure I'm convinced of.
Yeah. Well, did you ever hear that?
But maybe I am. Maybe, in fact, I would think almost of time and space as we know it as really being like a crystal that is very solid and does not move. It just looks like it to us from our perspective of being in different parts of it.
I don't know what it, I guess sort of a mantra, I guess, or something, but it's like what is it? Probably. To move is to suffer, or movement, through movement comes suffering, or something like that.
Yeah.
The inverse of that, basically. Being still actually avoids suffering. And I always thought that that was, like, incredibly simple if you just take it for what it says, and although I am translating it, so I don't know exactly what it says, but at least to my English ears, it sounds like movement causes suffering, and it makes sense. If everything is still, no one suffers.
If you ignore all sensory input and manage to still your thoughts, that is an extremely, extremely interesting place.
Yes.
And it is infinite, vast, without suffering. I haven't actually been able to get quite in. There's a certain level of voidness that is very difficult to achieve, and I think my meditation would have to go a lot farther. It is not existing and also not existing. You have to be between those two states. And undefined.
Well, do you focus on, like, a single point when you're meditating, or do you, like, focus on the...
When I have had success, it is a lack of focus. It is letting go of your thoughts. It is like a relaxation of your mind, and like your hand twitching around like this, just finally going, and just letting it stop. It's not for me been possible to reach a point where I don't have consciousness, but it has been possible to reach a point where that is all there is, and there is no character to it other than its simple existence. It kind of makes me think that maybe the consciousness that we all have is emerging out of a shared baseline, that we're sort of players for the consciousness of reality. We're like a tape deck moving along and playing the latent background noise, which is aware of itself.
Now that I like, latent background noise. Because I love latent background noise.
Because
like we were saying earlier, the
really,
sound of rain, the...
My notion of physics and metaphysics, it's not impossible to conceive that all of this happens exactly the way it was, but there is no consciousness and no one is really watching. The old Cohen about the tree.
Yeah,
if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there to hear it, does it make a sound?
Yeah.
No, because it doesn't even exist. It has to be observed. Nothing can happen in the whole universe without some observation. At least this is where I'm getting, I think, in my understanding of reality. I think a rock is at least conscious of being a rock and sits there in kind of a similar state to some of the meditation I would try for and hope to get. I mean, to actually get things to quiet, just really quiet, maybe half a dozen times I've pulled that in. I've had one time I had a very vivid vision of a goddess, like it was like an elephant goddess, like a female Ganesha, wearing these flowing robes that were covered in text that looked very much like Hindi.
Okay.
And was in constant motion. It was constantly rewriting itself, and even though I couldn't read it, I could. It was all beaming some information straight into my brain.
Wow.
And yeah, it was a very odd thing. I was just trying to get the quiet again. I ended up someplace.
And that's
that
not
was very strange.
Yeah, and that's not quiet because you're getting information.
Interaction with something.
Yeah.
I don't know in Hinduism of an elephant goddess. I did try to look online and found at least one other person describing what sounded like the exact same thing. If you can really get all of the synapses to just switch for a moment, I have to think that that space has got some tangent to death.
Yep.
How does it work?
Yeah.
And I guess that in a way, efforts are, it's kind of similar to reality. It's like reality to get in track. It's like if, you know, if you were a computer and you were running Linux, how could you figure that out? If you're interested in something, you should be exposed to it.
Yeah,
my dad had a lot of connections with people at universities in the area. But yeah, they had some sort of a PDP running an early BSD over there, and it had the whole lineup of the BSD games. And this guy brought me to see the computer, and
yeah.
I got to play with lasers, holograms, go see the computing facilities at all the different universities, but especially play with a Unix command line at the age of like 6 or 7. And after that, I got more into, you know, more personal computer type.
Yeah.
Built a calculating device based on relays when I was in third grade that had toggles to set this off and could be hardwired with a program.
Wow, that's crazy.
That ended up getting into the science fair that was for much older children than going all the way to states, but not winning there, but having them go, what happened?
I'll bet they regret it now, not letting
well,
me win.
There was some jealousy that this kid was there because at some point before the event, someone went in and pulled all the wires off the top.
Oh, are you serious?
Yep. So I came back to my thing and,
so
and
it was
its hard code
actually.
Was gone.
Yeah, yeah.
They erased it.
But, in the worst
oh,
of ways.
Well. Yep, it was erased for sure. And, well, whatever.
Yeah, whatever, right?
And I had an Atari 2600.
Oh, yeah.
Was interested in that, I guess.
Yeah.
Wanted to get things like the basic programming thing. Wanted to get a Timex Sinclair at the point when those first came out. It was like, you want a computer for $99? That was like the greatest deal in the world. But ended up with an Apple II.
Oh, okay.
I still have it.
Nice.
It was overclocked from 1 to 10 megahertz. So I got into all that. But I always liked Unix. I actually ended up running something called Hyper-C on the Apple II that had a Unix-like command line environment and an Integer C compiler.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so that kept me as well, you know.
So was it, I mean, it was a real C compiler?
Yeah.
That would, like,
it
oh,
was,
okay.
Well, it was not,
I mean,
not standard. It was Integer C. It couldn't handle floating point at all,
okay,
and it
okay.
had, to, you know, only a subset of the functions, but you
okay.
could do programming with it,
yeah,
which,
yeah.
you know, was interesting.
Cool.
And it was a compiled language, which was rare to have a true compiled language
yeah.
in the Apple II.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost everything was interpreted, even the so-called compiled things were usually a P system or something, and
oh, okay.
would compile to P code and then run that in a P code interpreter.
Okay.
But yeah, when I got to like my second or third college, the one I finally graduated from, one of my profs in an artificial intelligence class had us using Lisp, and I hated the Lisp interpreter that he had for us to use, which was for DOS, and it was just garbage.
Yeah.
And that was my initial interest in Linux. I'd already been kind of interested about it. I heard about it at a Christmas party at a screen printing company in December of 92. And,
okay.
and when
that's when
going,
it kind of when it first came out.
Yeah, 91 was, but by then it was beginning to work.
Yeah, okay.
And
okay.
H.J. Liu's boot root disk was available then. Early versions of SLS were out.
Yeah.
And that was what I ended up pulling down. MCC Plus, Tamu, SLS, a bunch of these different early distributions,
okay.
and trying them
better
out.
Better names back then than now,
yeah.
heck.
Well, Tamu was just because the people developing it were at Texas A&M.
Oh, okay.
MCC because it was the Manchester Computing Club in
right.
England.
Okay. That's starting to make a little bit more sense.
Yeah, but so I needed something that could do Lisp, and
okay.
SLS shipped with C Lisp, so I was like, all right, I'm in business.
Okay.
And pulled that down, and then started poking around the environment and discovered, you know, that it was trouble. It didn't want to install right, it had all these other problems. And it was him telling me, you know, I'd really like to be able to give the people in my class this and say, here, use this as a Lisp. It's a,
yeah.
a better Lisp and
yeah,
closer
yeah.
to Common Lisp and so on. And it's like, but it doesn't want to install and it's got all these bugs. And I'm like, let me see what I can do about that.
Nice.
yeah, and by the time then I was like, here you go, it's ready to go, you can have it. And then other people are going to want this. I should just, you know, put it up for FTP or something.
Right, yeah.
And would not ever have thought that, I would then, and then we'll continue to work on it for 17 years.
Yeah,
and,
really, I know, that's the bizarre thing.
I thought that I'm going to put this out, and I really thought that Peter McDonald of SLS was going to go, oh, I better diff my stuff against this and find these fixes and roll them in, but
right.
It never really happened. And, quickly, I had people who were like relying on me. It became a support issue very early on. That people needed help and they needed it to keep working. And
yeah.
You better keep doing this because we need this.
Wow, that is
and
so.
I was like, okay, I guess my calling has found me.
You don't do Lisp much anymore, I'm sure.
No, not really.
So it was just C Lisp that you were working on.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
was Emacs not
Emacs,
when I think of Lisp, of course, I think of Emacs. So,
I don't even think it ever occurred to me to try to use Emacs, or even I am not entirely sure how to execute Lisp within Emacs. I'm really not much of an Emacs user.
Okay.
But in fact, I'm not even a Vim user. I use Elvis, which is why that's still linked to VI.
I don't want
something to color things in.
Really?
And I also don't like, occasionally if I'm having a problem and I really cannot find it visual inspection, I will load it into Vim to see what Vim has to say about it. But
see there?
But Vim also has a habit of sometimes picking up my keystrokes and going into weird modes I don't understand.
Yeah,
and VI is more like, Elvis is more like the old VI I remember, so.
What about you? Are you an Elvis, a VI, or a Emacs?
Vim.
Vim.
Yes.
I mean, VBATS, Vim.
See, now,
VBATS is Vim.
VBATS thinks I should change that symlink.
Well, here's the deal.
Most people probably think I should change that symlink.
Actually, I like the symlink.
Do you really?
I like.
I do.
The only thing that is the default.
I just don't need. I don't need the stuff in. I think I've got a box. I know there's a box somewhere that actually just has Vim. It's one of my ARM machines. But I forget exactly what I have to look at the config. But you can set your Vim RC that it behaves more sanely than that default that we ship. It's more like a traditional VI.
Yeah.
It doesn't get you into those strange
sometimes
modes
you don't need
easily.
All the syntax or highlighting and the auto.
Didn't I used to ship the real deal? I think I did have NVI in there
that,
maybe an extra years ago.
Probably before my
maybe
slash
it's
slash
just
experience.
Set compatible. I don't know. Jesus.
Yeah, it could be just set compatible.
So
are they still like
Chad
passing
Wallenberg
out?
Did the education in open source. So it was all giddy. There's like, I'm staring at a god, man.
Oh yeah,
it's like the Intel.
The dude with the Lucky Charms shirt.
That's the guy.
He's like the Intel USB commercial.
He's really mostly a normal person.
You're a famous person. So,
everyone is a famous person in their own movie.
Down on you, and so I was scared to come over here. I didn't even know.
I might have had a little bit of it.
I don't understand how you're so young. That's my big thing. I expected like a...
How old do you think I am?
Slacker has been around since like, what, like 1963 or something?
Yeah, something.
I can't believe you're still recording this.
Huh?
Are you still recording this? I wouldn't have said anything.
Well, I mean, you know how I edit.
I don't
represent reality.
I'm just a random person who I had Patrick send this to me because
I'm glad I was still recording that. Actually,
I knew it. You're supposed to be older.
It's not me.
Next time you see Patrick, he'll be completely different.
This is like, like the first time I heard this, I don't think I've ever heard the same that sound quality,
mm-hmm.
except maybe like you said from a DAT. But
yeah.
Then I've never had a portable DAT out in the world, so naturally it's gonna sound good in the studio. And then you're like, you know, this thing you can just carry around.
Yeah,
totally.
I had mics made by a place called Core Sound. I don't know if you ever heard of them. The guy makes bullet mics. They're in 22. casings and have little alligator clips in the back of them, and you can you know, put them on your hat and manage to stealth record that
yeah,
way.
Nice.
But they're very high quality. It's got a the good ones are the cheap ones don't have any battery box, but the good one has got phantom power.
Nice.
And the mics are just, you know, no real self noise to speak of.
Yeah.
I took that thing and set it out next to a pond in upstate New York where there were about a bazillion bullfrogs doing their thing, and let it tape. And that is an interesting recording to put on. It's like you're just in the middle of it.
All the years come by. Broken angel sings from a guitar. The end is just a song. He's crying like the wind. And nothing comes for free. there's nothing you can hold for very long. And when you hear that song, come crying like the wind. It seems like all this life was just a dream.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.